Welcome to Dubs OT, your weekly Warriors podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring interviews with players, coaches, and media members. Dubs OT is brought to you by TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, home of the 2020 PGA Championship. Toscalito Tire and Automotive, your one-stop, on-the-spot auto service headquarters in San Francisco and the North Bay. Terzo, an authentic, upscale European restaurant in the Cal Hollow neighborhood in San Francisco. And Rose's Cafe, a favorite local hangout also in Cal Hollow. Now here are your hosts, Ray Woodson and Joe Castellano.
Coming up, we'll talk about the Warriors' win over Orlando, seventh consecutive win for Golden State. We'll hear from Warriors guard Klay Thompson. Also, our reporter Ryan Leong talks with Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle. But first, I want to tell you about our favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your two-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. Well, Ray, plenty to talk about with the Warriors as they are on a big-time roll now, as we kind of expected at some point. Now they've won seven games in a row, and they've got this big game against the Celtics coming up on Thursday, which we will talk about later. But let's just talk about the way they're playing and what they did on Monday against the Magic, especially without Steph Curry. You know, you wondered, will this be a really close game without Steph? How will the other players react? And certainly they reacted and showed the kind of depth they have on this team.
Yeah, well, you saw last week without Kevin Durant, and then without Andre Iguodala, they are a little bit different, but they don't miss a beat. You know, the only thing that I think was affected the other night is maybe not as many threes. He had Sean Livingston in there, and he plays his mid-range game, but he does what he does well. He doesn't try to be Steph, plays within himself, as the old cliche goes, and they're fine. You know, this is interesting to me. And I said it last week when Durant was out. It's like, oh, all right, here's a little twist. It'll be interesting to see the rotation Steve Kerr has. And I think he doesn't mind and in some ways relishes the opportunity, A, to get some bench guys some more playing time, and B, just to see how the combinations work without a certain player in. So I think you're going to see that a lot this year. There's going to be rotating rest, you know, especially for the veteran players. That's how much depth they have. They go 12 or 13 deep, you know, coming at you in waves. And now Caspi is his ankle's better, and he's getting more playing time. Kevon Looney is getting in the mix, and he's making an impact. You know, early on it was Jordan Bell looking pretty impressive for a rookie, so Looney rose up to the challenge. It's a lot of this intrigue this year, I think, is going to be with how Steve Kerr settles on his rotation down the road. It hasn't happened yet, though. There's still a lot of experimentation going on.
That was pretty interesting with Looney as well, because they didn't pick up his option, and I think there was a lot of speculation out there that he's not going to play that much, and lately he has been playing a lot. I mean, as you just mentioned, yeah, you know, he's in that rotation. Actually, I saw in the San Francisco Chronicle story that he's had more minutes lately than Zaza Pachulia, the starting center, and JaVale McGee. So, you know, yeah, he's definitely getting a chance here.
You like that, because this is, you know, somebody was kind of written off, and, you know, he's not up for a contract next year. He could be a free agent, could very well come back if things work out, but it's all up in the air. This is a crossroads for his career. It's a big moment, but Steve Kerr, I'm sure, has been telling him, hey, you know, you're going to get your chance. You're going to get some minutes as time goes on, and, you know, that's how you keep the player emotionally invested. But for Kevon, I mean, he's got to be emotionally invested, because this is a big time for him, A, to maybe save his career, B, maybe save his career with the Warriors, or C, impress somebody else. You know, it was to the point with the hip surgeries that you wondered if he was going to be an NBA player. Well, this year he came in, lost about 20 pounds, has looked a whole lot better, and is a lot more active, and I think he's gaining confidence, too.
You know, early on in that game against Orlando, I thought the Warriors looked sloppy. And, you know, that's the way it was really in the first week or so, maybe 2 weeks of the season. And we talked a little bit with Bruce Jenkins from San Francisco Chronicle about that. And he said he kind of expected that they would always have turnovers. But I think it was kind of sticking with them that they weren't real clean in a lot of games, and it looked like they reverted back to that in the first quarter, maybe, you know, part of the first half there against Orlando, but then they cleaned it up, and of course Curry wasn't in there. What did you think about that? I mean, did you think that, you know, it's just kind of difficult at first to not have Curry in there, and maybe that's part of it, or do they just kind of lapse into that sometimes?
Well, whether they have Curry or not, they kind of play around with stuff in the first half of these games, and you know, whether Curry's in there or not, turnovers are sometimes a problem for them. And they do clean it up in the third quarter. And so then you have to ask, okay, Curry or no, what happens in the third quarter? Because they outscored Orlando, I think, by 13 in the third quarter, which is kind of what they've been doing.
That's
they did
their
it
quarter,
a different
yeah.
Way.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't as incendiary. It wasn't Curry going off with threes. You know, Kevin Durant played well. But I think what happens at the half, a couple of things. Yes, they make some good adjustments, but I think more than anything, they get a little more determined to lock down. They also understand, you know, the tendencies and what's going on offensively with their opponent. They get the best scouting report you can get by kind of feeling them out and playing them for 24 minutes. Then they get a better idea. They make those adjustments. But also, I think the defensive intensity ramps up in that third quarter. And they know that they can kill teams in the third quarter. They can put them away. And it's happened time and again. So they have this feeling, hey, just 10 or 12 minutes of really good defense, and we can take in control a basketball game against most of these opponents. And that's been justified time and again so far this year.
Let's listen into what Klay Thompson said after the game on Monday against the Magic about those turnovers early on.
I think we're just embarrassed of the turnovers we threw in the first half. So we will throw some bad ones. I mean, that's why we make so many great plays, but we've been making that adjustment. I mean, it's okay if we have, it's not okay, but you can get by with having 16 turnovers if you finish with 35 assists. That's a pretty good ratio. And I thought we did a great job distributing the ball tonight. A lot of those turnovers are just mental errors. And so as the season gets on, I promise you we'll get better about it.
Yeah, I think they will, Ray. And, you know, that's the thing. Steve Kerr probably has alerted them to the fact that, no, it's not okay, because he started to say, yeah, that's okay. We have so many assists. You know, it's okay if we have turnovers. But I think Steve Kerr's trying to pound it in. No, let's go for not having as many turnovers. You know, we can be even better.
Yeah, I mean, you are going to have turnovers. It's very rare to have a zero turnover game in the NBA. So I think Steve Kerr, everybody understands that. There's a good number to get to, and that's about 12 to 15 for them. I think that's when they're at their optimal level. Because, look, they play at a higher pace than most NBA teams. Often they're at the very top in terms of pace. And, for example, the Celtics don't play at quite that pace. And they pass the ball more than other teams do. I'll have to go back and look at the actual stats of number of passes, but they've got to be way up there in that category, too. So when you have those two things going on, pace and pass, mistakes are going to be made, and they're very aggressive with some of their passes. So that part is understandable. It's just, again, Clay referred to it, the kind of mistakes you make, the dumb passes. You got to eliminate those. They recognize that. And as the I don't even know if there's an NBA stat for dumb passes, but if they can cut down on those, you know, they're already scary, for crying out loud. But they actually feel like they could get a little bit better at that. And I think that's going to come as the season goes on. And, you know, look out, NBA.
You talk about depth and being able to win without Steph Curry in this game. But I think over the course of the whole season, you need him a lot. And I don't know, it seemed like there was sort of this narrative a little bit on the broadcast about, you know, this team is so great. You know, maybe they can win without Steph Curry. But I just think that he's still so valuable to the team that I don't like to see that narrative get taken too far. You know what I mean? I mean, I think it's sort of a misnomer that, yeah, this team can win without him. Yeah, they beat the Magic. But, you know, I like the depth and everything. But I still think Curry brings so much to the table. And part of it is just the whole flow of the team running through him as the point guard.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it. To me, it's not even a debate. Of course you've got to have him there. You can get by with any one star player for a short period of time, and especially on this team with the depth they have. But nobody is thinking that long-term you can get by without Steph. They got by for a while without Kevin Durant last year, but you know he comes back and is MVP of the finals. He was unbelievable. I don't think anybody's going to argue, though, over a long period of time, especially in the postseason, you want to do without any of these guys. You know, sure, they could still have a very good chance to win it all without, say, Steph, without, say, KD. But nobody wants to test that long term. For a game or two, sure. I mean, and again, depending on the opponent, too. You can beat them. You're not going to worry about it. It's November. Just make sure everybody's, you know, on the same page and playing on a string, as Steve Kerr likes to say, by playoff time.
Well, it is fun to see how much depth they have. Let's hear what Klay Thompson had to say about the depth of this team playing without Steph Curry on Monday.
It's what's been able to propel us to three straight finals. I really believe that our depth has been incredible. And when, you know, a guy like Steph's out, he's not really replaceable. But a guy like Sean Livingston comes in and gives us amazing minutes, you know. 6 assists, 1 turnover, plus 16, 16 points. Just a great player, one of the best backups in the NBA. Really knows how to fit in with our team. And, when Steph's out, we can't do it individually. We got to do it collectively. And it goes for if it was Kevin or Draymond or me or Andre. We just have such a deep team. So give our front office credit for having that foresight to seeing this before the season.
And I think that for Steve Kerr, it almost helps him a little bit when a player does go down, because then he can sort of get these other players in, see how it works when there is an injury. You know, it's not that he's rooting for one of his star players to be out, but it does have a positive influence on how he's running this team in the rotation.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mentioned it a few minutes ago. I think he kind of relishes some of these games where he can put on the lab coat and kind of tinker with the rotation and see who's going to respond. And also, you want to keep those bench players involved and mentally engaged as the season goes on. So you want to throw them a bone and get them extra minutes, extra playing time. And so resting guys or, you know, hopefully short-term injuries, and I think Steph's going to be okay to go to Boston, I think that that works out best long-term, because you find out who you can trust. And that's the thing. Okay, Cleveland, for example, had guys last year. They had some depth. They made some acquisitions. And you know, they're working through personnel changes now. And Boston is real good, but they lost Hayward. I think that's going to play out as the season goes on, finding out, A, that you have better depth if you're the Warriors, and B, Steve Kerr is finding out guys he can trust. And I think he's got more guys he's going to be able to trust, and that's going to work to the advantage in crunch time as we get later on in the season and into the postseason. So, you know, the old saw with the NBA coaches is they'll whittle it down to 8 guys in the playoffs. That's not going to be the case with these Warriors. Not only the young players, but veteran players that he's going to be able to trust in critical minutes, say in the Western Conference Finals in the fourth quarter. You know that you can roll out these bench players, and they're going to hold up their end of the bargain. They're going to at least hold serve, right, until the regulars get back in. And that's what this is all about. And they've been through this now 3 years in a row going into mid-June. So they know what the drill is. And the only difference now is you got a couple of young players and a couple of veterans you've brought in, like Nick Young, Omri Caspi, who are going to have to understand what that role is. So I think it's important to get these guys playing time and playing with the current group of players that the Warriors have who are so great, but also getting them some confidence getting them to understand, hey, you're part of this team too.
Yeah, Steve Kerr's done a great job with that so far. Coming up, we're going to hear Ryan Leong's conversation with Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle. Ryan Leong doing some reporting for us here on thesportsvirus.com, and we'll be back right after this.
Are you looking for a great place for dinner? Then you really need to try Terzo, an authentic, upscale European neighborhood restaurant in the heart of Cow Hollow in San Francisco. When you sit down at your table at Terzo, you will feel the warm and welcoming ambiance. They make you feel like you're at home with great service and a delicious meal. Serving dinner only, Terzo offers unique food drawn from the Mediterranean region. They change their menu daily based on the local availability of product. Open 7 days a week, Terzo suggests reservations, but they do have a bar area available for walk-ins. Check out their website at terzosf.com for daily menus and hours. Drop by Terzo at 3011 Steiner at Union Street in San Francisco for an exceptional neighborhood dining experience and your private dining needs.
Recently, the SportsVirus.com reporter Ryan Leong talked with Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle. Here was that conversation.
And joining me on Dubs OT, it's my special pleasure to be joined by Connor Letourneau, beat writer from the San Francisco Chronicle, covering your Golden State Warriors. And Connor, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, second year on the beat for you, right? I mean, you're lucky you took over for Rusty Simmons, and he himself, of course, was able to cover the first Warriors championship. First of all, your overall thoughts on how the Dubs are doing. What are they? How many games are they in now? I forget the exact total.
This is their 12th, right?
Yeah.
So, no, they're peaking right now. This is a team that got off to a little bit of a sluggish start, but now they've won five in a row, I think by a total of 108 points. They're clicking on both ends of the court. You saw tonight them really showcase their depth. You know, Kevin Durant was out with a thigh contusion, and they played every single player on this roster meaningful minutes outside of Jordan Bell, who got in for garbage time. And you saw guys like Nick Young, Omri Caspi, David West step up in really crucial moments. And that speaks volumes, because when you get deeper in the grind of an 82-game NBA season, they're going to need those guys to step up. And to beat a good Minnesota team convincingly without Durant is huge.
I talked to the Timberwolves after the postgame, and they were mentioning how, to me, it doesn't seem like the Warriors are a beatable team unless you play perfect basketball. I mean, is there really any kind of weakness right now that the Warriors have, possibly other than turnovers?
I've been saying this since preseason, but the biggest opponent this team is going to face is themselves. I mean, is their own tendency to get complacent, to get lackadaisical on defense, to make sloppy passes. You saw every loss they've had this season, they really beat themselves. And that's cliche to say, but it's really true. I mean, they had high turnovers. They had inconsistent defensive stretches that really crippled them. And right now, during this five-game winning streak, they're cutting down on the turnovers, except for tonight in the first half, they had 13, but they cut it down in the second half. And they're playing good defense. And when you pair that with an offense that has been torrid really all season, they really are impossible to beat.
We're on Dubs OT here with Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle. And Connor, of course, being the beat writer, you're ensconced with the team. You go to all practices. You're writing off-day game stories. How hard is it for you to come up with new story ideas when you kind of know the lay of the land of this team?
It's not as hard as you would think, to be honest with you, because when you are around the team as much as I am, and you see things on a day-to-day basis, you see how many different angles there are, how many personalities there are. And that's one thing I love about being a beat writer and really covering this team, is there's an endless amount of stories. And when they are as almost monotonously good as they have been in the past, it frees me up to write a lot of, you know, human interest pieces, to do a lot of features, enterprise, stuff that goes beyond the court, because we all know how good this team is, and so I love getting a little bit beyond the court.
Speaking of human interest stories and sort of that along those lines, what would you say is the most interesting story you've done in that realm?
My favorite, and it's not a feel-good story necessarily, but my favorite I've done is probably on Bob Myers and just the personal turmoil he's had to go through the past couple of years with his brother-in-law passing in a tragic hiking accident. That was a story that I put a lot into, so that one comes to mind. But there's so many great personalities on this team. I just love getting to know them on a human level. Guys like JaVale McGee, David West. I mean, these are fully developed people who have a lot going on away from the court. So it's been a lot of fun.
And again, joined by Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle, beat writer for the Golden State Warriors. Connor, this is not your first beat. You used to be with the Cal Golden Bears. And just describe for me the differences between covering a team like Cal and then, of course, covering a pro team like the Warriors, who seems to, of course, have the entire attention of the world on it, of course, the Bay Area as well.
Obviously, there's some obvious differences. I mean, the interest level is much higher. But I tell everyone, all beats are the same. I approach this beat the same way I approach the Cal Bears in a lot of ways. But the thing I really like about covering this team is the access is so great. You know, for a team with as much interest internationally as the Warriors have, they give me the freedom to tell good stories, to go behind the scenes with guys, which I'm very thankful for. And there's something really cool about covering a team that you know is culturally and historically significant. This isn't just a basketball team. This is a bit of history, you know. And I'm very aware of that every single day when I cover this team, and I try to keep that in mind, because I'm not just writing about a basketball team. I'm writing about something that's historic.
When you say historic, just the fact of how well they're playing, or
I think this is going to go down as one of the best NBA teams of all time, and one of the best sports teams of all time. It could go down as the best sports team of all time. When it's all said and done. I mean, you have four guys who are probably future Hall of Famers who are in their prime right now. That has never happened before. So I'm very aware of that, and it's a privilege to cover them.
I know you probably mentioned you've had probably greater aspirations in the long run at some point. Maybe you'll write a book about all the stories you're chronicling now, as I say chronicle. And just wanted to, in closing, ask you about what your thoughts are about when the Warriors are going to move to the new Chase Center. I mean, certainly it looks like it's going to change their fan base. It's going to change a lot of the whole landscape. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not sure how much it's going to change the fan base, because I think the fan base has already changed. I mean, tickets are already so expensive, and you know, the fans who are going to Oracle now are already different than the fans that were coming a decade ago. So I do think it's going to change in terms of just a money standpoint. I mean, the valuation on this team is already well into the billions. It's going to go significantly higher once they move to the Chase Center. And obviously the whole vibe that goes along with being in San Francisco is going to change. But in terms of the night in and night out overall vibe inside the arena, I don't think it's going to be that different, because they're already at such a level where you need to have some money to get into this arena.
Yeah, and you mentioned, of course, how accommodating the Warriors are. Is there anything you'd change differently about how they do their coverage, or if anything you'd like to do differently, if you could?
I mean, I'm always trying to improve. I'm always trying to approach things differently. I honestly have no complaints about how the Warriors go about their business. This is honestly a class organization who knows how to deal with media, and I'm not just saying that. I mean that. I've covered a few teams, and this is definitely the best run operation I've ever been around.
All right. Well, Connor, thanks so much for your time. I know you're a busy man writing about the Warriors for the Chronicle, and thanks for joining us here on Dubs OT.
All right. I appreciate it.
More Dubs OT right after this.
If you're looking for a great place to stop by for a bite to eat in San Francisco, Rose's Cafe is the place to go. A favorite in the Cow Hollow neighborhood for the past 20 years, Rose's Cafe is a hangout for locals who bask in the sun at sidewalk tables, duck inside for a cappuccino, or stay for a leisurely lunch or dinner. Many customers are regulars who frequent their pretty bistro cafe that offers table service and deliciously consistent food, Italian fare created using organic local produce, fresh seafood, humanely raised meats, and free-range poultry. Rose's artisan bakers bake a daily selection of pastries, desserts, and breads. Menu highlights include pizzas, daily soups, and house-made pastas. A robust beer and wine list with many by-the-glass options are available. So stop by Rose's Cafe at 2298 Union Street in San Francisco.
Well, obviously, Connor Letourneau is having a great time covering the Warriors, and he's doing a fantastic job, Ray. I mean, he's pumping out stories every day. I don't think this guy's even taking a day off, and we can't get enough of it. I mean, it's fun to read all the stories. I mean, the latest one in Wednesday's San Francisco Chronicle was about Draymond Green and his trainer and best friend, Travis Walton, and you know just how hard he works. There was a recent story about Klay Thompson and how hard he was working in the offseason. Like, he always had to be near a gym. Even when they first got to China, it was like, hey, where can I go shoot, you know, rather than take in the sights. So I think Connor Letourneau has kind of taken us inside the Warriors in a great way, and I'm really enjoying it. I don't know about you.
I'm enjoying it, and it sounds like he is too. And listen, you hit the lottery when you get to be a writer for the Warriors in a lot of different ways. I mean, just not only are you covering a once-in-a-generation team, but it's a good group of guys, and there are interesting stories. And Raymond Ritter is so great to the PR department, and Brett Winkler and all those guys facilitating this. And, you know, we've experienced that as well, and it's why, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people covering this team, and one of the reasons there are a lot of people covering this team is that fans can't get enough of it, and really there's no end to the stories that we have too. And so it's always a pleasure to talk to all these guys. Last interview I did was Zaza Pachulia, Jordan Bell to start the year. They're just enjoyable people to talk to on top of everything else. And a lot of these guys are under the radar funny too. And I'll use Klay Thompson. We played some sound bites from him earlier. He's just you know, there's a wit there that you get to understand as you get to know these players over the years. So we'll see how long we can keep it going. Maybe another 3, 4, 5 years.
Right, exactly. I think when you look at this upcoming game against the Boston Celtics, you keep saying it, and I know I've said it too, that we're just in November, but it is a good early season test for the Warriors. You know, they were losing some games early on when they weren't playing well, but now they're playing great, and they get to play a team that's won 13 games in a row on the road in Boston. That team is really meshing together very well, and kind of surprising, because once Gordon Hayward went down on the opening night, you know, right away, you thought, well, that's a big piece that they're not going to have. They're not going to be that great. They might be up there near the top with Cleveland, but, you know, you wondered what kind of a start they would get off to, and they're the best team in the NBA right now.
Yeah, they've on a tremendous run, and they play good defense. Now, you could argue some of the teams they've played against are not highly rated offensively, and that may feed into the numbers, but they've done what they've had to do. They've got a great coach in Brad Stevens. And also, what happens when a star player or a starter goes down? Okay, like with the Warriors, you're going to find out what you got off the bench and with these younger players. And, you know, they've got guys like Jason Tatum, who, as I understood it, when we were going through all the Kyrie trade talks, that was one player they did not want to give up, that they feel very confident about his future. And I think he's going to be a really good player in this league. He already is. I mean, he's shooting close to 50% from three and over 50% overall. He rebounds. He can guard different positions on the floor. Tremendous athlete. And they've got guys with length, and then they have the smart veteran players like Al Horford and Aaron Baines coming off the bench. And, of course, Kyrie is off to a very good start, no matter what Nick Wright says. He's off to a very good start. Of course, he had the Baines elbow inadvertent that caused a facial fracture. He missed the win over Toronto. He came back and played with the mask against Brooklyn. This team, and Steve Kerr said it after the practice, they play on a string. They play together, and that's pretty remarkable when you have guys that you've brought in, right, that you've just thrown into the mix, and that they're getting on the same page really quickly. So it's the game of the year so far, I think, in the NBA. Boston, the West Coast, the defending champions, the team that presumes to unseat them at some point, and I think Steve Kerr is right. Boston is the team of the future in the East.
And Steph Curry should be ready to play. I mean, he would have played Monday if it was a playoff game, so everybody's got their guns, you know, well, exception of Gordon Hayward, who's out for the whole year. But, you know, I want to talk about a little bit about Kyrie and his decision, because, of course, he was criticized for doing that. He could have been on that Cavaliers team and, you know, pretty much thinking, okay, we're going to make the finals again, maybe win another title in Cleveland. But he didn't take that sort of easier road. I think you have to sort of admire it a little bit, because he is the man in Boston. I mean, they have good pieces around him, but they're not going to get anywhere without him. Whereas in Cleveland, it's always going to be about LeBron James. So I kind of like what he did in a way. I know some people don't, because, you know, he asked for that trade. You already have it pretty great. Why would you need to do more? But he wants to show everybody that he can be sort of the face of a team.
It's funny. They criticized Kevin Durant for going to a team that was already good. And then they criticized Kyrie for leaving a team that was already pretty
good.
You know, it's like you can't win in these situations. Kyrie owes nobody an apology. And, you know, it was probably true. This is LeBron's team. He felt like he could be even more of a lead dog on a team. And you know what? So far it's worked out really well for him. And I think for him, the talent he possesses, he could very well end up being at that next echelon, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be Boston and Cleveland in the Eastern Finals, depending on how the seeding works out. I think that those are the two best teams. So you've added a little more drama, you know. It's been great for the league as well. Now listen, Kyrie hit a big shot in Game 7 a couple of years ago, helped them win a championship. So like I said, he owes nobody an apology. He's one of those guys that, and I use this phrase a lot, got his ring, now wants to spread his wings. And in this case, by spreading his wings, he could get another ring at some point.
That's true. And this road trip's going to take the Warriors to not only Boston, but Philadelphia, Brooklyn, back-to-back games there Saturday and Sunday, Philly and Brooklyn. They're not far away from each other, but still, back-to-back games. And then Oklahoma City, which, of course, is always an emotional game when you think about Durant, as you mentioned. So this will be a fun road trip to sort of take a look at where the Warriors stand after that. Can they keep this role going? You know, of course they can, but this is a little more of a challenge.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be fun. And I sometimes think the Warriors play better on the road than they do at home. And I was talking to Matt Steinmetz, covers the Warriors, of course, 95.7 The Game. We were on the air together the other day, and he thinks they'll go 4-0 on this trip. And they very well could. I mean, this is going to have their whole focus. It's a business trip. It's not terribly long, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, you're going to have three games in four nights. That's going to be a little bit tough. But it's going to be a lot of spice to it. You know, the finishing up with OKC, I mean, come on. With everything's been going on the last couple of years. And you start off with Boston, it's great. And there's, you know, laying in the weeds, Philadelphia, and we saw them Saturday, and that first half was really fun. And it was played at a great pace. They've got some athletes who I don't think, you know, over the course of the season they can hang with the Warriors, but they gave you a glimpse in the first half what they can do. And so they're going to be going after the Warriors on Saturday and feeling like, you know, we need to put together three or four good quarters, not just a half. And they're a team that's on the rise in the East, and I think they're also a team of the future. So it's going to be a very interesting road trip. I think, if the Warriors play their game and they have the focus, these teams are going to have their attention. Yeah, they can go 4-0.
We'll continue our Warriors conversation after this from Toscalito Tire and Automotive.
You have to admit, collecting NBA titles is a new trend for the Warriors, but at Toscalito Tire and Automotive, they've been winning since 1971 with quality tires and reliable auto and light truck repair at six Bay Area locations near you. Toscalito Tire and Automotive will take care of you like family. After all, this is a family business started by two nice Italian boys, Ken Toscanini and Vince Ippolito, who combine their skills, knowledge, passion for cars, and their names to create Toscalito Tire and Automotive. With four Marin locations, plus the marina in San Francisco and Vallejo, Toscalito, more than just a tire store.
To finish up, I wanted to talk about Kevin Durant, and I know we'll be talking about him a lot this season, but that was a fabulous game that he had against the Magic. You know, once again, showing off his skills handling the ball. I really like the Bob Fitzgerald story. He was talking about how, you know, Durant grew up as a guard, and you could just see yep. that in him, the way he thinks, but at the same time, the way he can, you know, get to the basket with those long arms, everything he does, but not just on the court, Ray. I really like some of the things that he does off the court, just the reaction that he has. Like, there was one reporter who totally forgot his question, and he sort of let the guy off the hook. You know, I don't remember exactly what he said, something like, you know, I forget things all the time, or, you know, and then there was another reporter who asked him about, you know, a so-called yelling match with Draymond Green. He said, oh, no, we were just mother bleeping each other, yeah. you know, and so he just has fun with everything. I love his attitude, and it's something I really didn't notice that much when he was in OKC. Now that he's here in the Bay Area, I think a lot of people are, you know, sort of enjoying his personality.
Well, you get an idea of, first of all, how thoughtful he is, and that's another guy who's kind of under the radar sense of humor because he's very deadpan, right? But he's pretty quick wit as well. You know, everything I've seen about him, this guy's just got it together, you know, and he's got a good foundation and, you know, very close to his mom. And we saw that when they won the championship last year and she was right there to hug him. And he's got a heart as well. And it sounds like he's got some business acumen on top of that, which is one of the lures of being in the Bay Area and being involved in high tech. You know, this has been more than I thought it was going to be with him. And you know, I think he's connected even more with Bay Area fans. And, of course, they were going to connect with him because of his ability. But on top of that, I think he's been really good, really solid with media, with fans, things like that. As far as the play on the court, I mean, one of the things I thought they'd miss with Durant out with the thigh contusion was defense. That was one of the things I worried about. Offense I didn't worry about. But, you know, what he's bringing to the floor defensively now, and he's clearly bidding to be all defensive NBA this year on top of everything else he does. And it is interesting because, like you said, he was a smaller guy and then shot up during his high school years. And, you know, so he had that ball handling skill. Now, one of the things that's kind of a scouting report, a knock on him now, is the high dribble. But he sort of can't help that because he's 7 feet tall. But he's an amazing ball handler for his size. He's one of those unicorns that we see in the NBA now that, you know, back in the day when I was growing up, a guy who was 6'11", who shot more than 10 feet from the hoop, oh, my God, what a skilled guy. And now that's all these guys can shoot. All these guys can run the floor. All these guys can handle the ball. And he's, you know, part of that wave that we're seeing in the NBA now, these incredibly talented, oversized athletes and the skill set that they bring. And, you know, this guy's in his prime now. So we're seeing probably the very best that we're going to see of Kevin Durant, and it's Hall of Fame good.
Well, you're right. I mean, when you watch Magic Johnson, that seemed like such an outlier that he was 6'9" and he could be a point guard. But now, yeah, there's a lot of guys who can handle the ball, could shoot from the outside that are big and tall like that. And what you said about his defense, you know, that's what I'm really enjoying as well. The way he's helping on defense, blocking a lot of shots. And that kind of gets lost in all of the three-point shooting that the Warriors do, is that they do a lot of switching on defense and they help each other out so much. That's when they're really kind of at their height, their peak of playing good basketball, is the way they play defense together.
Yeah, and guys who can guard different positions. And I think you're going to see that with Boston as well. To a smaller degree, I mean, not as many players, but they do that well, too. They're kind of getting in that mode. But one of the things we noticed when the Warriors had such a hard time with OKC in the Western Finals a couple of years ago, and they had to come back from 3-1 to win it, is how the Thunder at the time upset passing lanes. The passes the Warriors were used to making that were getting disrupted, and Durant was right in the middle of that. And that was really the first time I said, you know, this guy can be really good defensively. That's one of the things that surprised us in the Western Finals, and maybe it shouldn't have. But I think it's becoming more and more a part of his emphasis, a part of his game. And he knows, too, you get a steal, you deflect a pass, it's off to the races with this team. You'll end up getting a dunk or a wing three wide open at the other end.
All right, Ray, we'll be talking to each other after Turkey Day, as we're going to see each other at the Warriors-Bulls game, which is their next home game after this road trip.
No, I like it, and I think they're going to eat on this road trip. I'm looking at 4-0, too.
Thanks for listening to the Dubs OT Warriors podcast. Join Joe Castellano and Ray Woodson again next week on thesportsvirus.com.